You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Tuesday, but it's really faux Monday because of the holiday. So it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from SASFIN. And this podcast is proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Before we get on to international markets, because they're dominating at the moment, with a really good European session and a really good early US session, David, let's have a look at MultiChoice. I think these are their maiden results, aren't they? MultiChoice Group Limited summarised financial results for the year ended 31st of March. First of all, do you like this one, or did you like it when you heard of it coming to the JSE?
Not really. Nothing against the company, just against their position. So it came out 15 minutes ago, so I haven't really had a good look at it. But they did give us a fairly good, you know, comprehensive trading update. My worry with them, and it's old technology, you know, at a time where people are streaming things. It's even sport, I think, is beginning to lose its appeal. It is one of the big attractions in that. And in order for companies like MultiChoice to really prosper and do well, they've got to come out with a lot of local content that people want to watch on an ongoing basis. So I would prefer to look elsewhere, mainly at streaming companies. Lindsay, you know, I'm off tomorrow, and I was just thinking, I've got quite a lot of traveling. What I'm going to do is maybe go on to take my laptop or an iPad, go on to Netflix and download series or something like this that I can watch.
Right.
You understand? And I think that's very much the kind of way that people watch. And I don't know if they've got the kind of products that can compete. So, in essence, nothing against the company. They're trying very hard, but I just think they're kind of almost Volkswagen or in an industry that's changing dramatically.
Yeah, it's, on the other hand, though, if you have a look at the first paragraph, I also haven't read the results as we pre-record at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It says here, a total of 1.6 million subscribers were added across the continent, representing 12% year-on-year growth. Now, this is almost like Facebook coming out with its new offering of a payment system. It says that there are 1.2 billion people around the world unbanked. Well, there must be millions and millions of people on the African continent that are un-TV'd, if you see what I mean. So there is still a market in areas that are yet to have the luxury of Netflix and other such services. Disney, for example.
Okay, so what they have to do is they have to localize the content. So they add in Nigeria, or they add in Chad, or they add in wherever they are, Benin, you know, wherever they're operating, that they've got to make sure that the content that they offer is locally produced. You know, that's going to be the answer.
Yes.
And that's what Netflix is doing. Netflix is, don't think others are not doing it. So for Netflix to attract customers, you have to have local content. And I think one of the beauties that I'm finding funny with Netflix or Amazon is that I'm suddenly being exposed to French TV programs, and that, yes, I have to read subtitles, but you get past it, you know, as long as you can read, and I happen to pass matric, and that's, I can read. And but the point I'm making is that they've got to do that, and they've got to use they've got to be able to use the money they earn to produce. So I'm not knocking it, please. I'm not in any way, but I would prefer to look elsewhere. I know they're big cash generators, although they've said that they're not going to pay a dividend this year and maybe next year, and I think that could be the attraction.
Okay.
So, yeah, good for them. I'll go through it in greater detail. It's unfair of me to really dispense kind of a view without having gone through the numbers. And I like management there. Very competent people there. Got no problem with them at all.
Well, to your point of adding local content, it says here the group continued its investment in local content, adding a further 4,600 hours to take the local content library to over 50,000 or nearly 50,000 hours. The spend on local general entertainment content as a percentage of total general entertainment content increased from 38% to 40%, and they've got a target of 45%. Headline earnings per share up 10%. So maybe for the African continent, this is still a viable business model and offering.
Yes.
Maybe.
I refer you to a very interesting article that was in The Economist, not this week, the week before, in which they discuss the internet and the growth of the internet, and that most people in poorer countries, you know, use the internet not only to not for educational purposes, but rather for entertainment purposes. And yes. I think this is a classic example of where, if it's a cheap enough offering, people will now, you know, be able to entertain themselves, and that's a lot, you know, it's a lot cheaper and a lot more fulfilling than perhaps spending the money elsewhere. So entertainment is a very important part of the internet's future, although this is not strictly internet, but you know, this is cable TV or some form of expanded TV.
Yeah. Well, on that note as well, I think there's a company that has been long associated with Warner Media or Time Warner, whatever it's called these days. It's called Bad Robot, and it's run by a chap, I think, called J.J. Adams or Abram. J.J. Abram, I think it is. Anyway, his company, Bad Robot, just produces ideas. It's almost like a production company. It'll go to Warner and say, look, I've got a really good idea for a program, and it's a massive business. It's almost like a think tank for television programs. Mm. They've just been bought for $500 million by Warner, which is a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, it just shows you how important that side of the market is. I was watching Disney, and long-suffering Disney investor we were, and they came out with Disney Plus, you know, which is another streaming service. They've got the content, and which is a big plus factor. But the importance, and this is what put Netflix, maybe Disney ahead of the others, Amazon to an extent is there, is that they've got the content, and that's going to draw you in, you know, whether you can attract people with top quality content. And I've seen some incredible shows, you know, that, which are now produced by non-traditional houses.
Mm.
So yeah, very, very important. Don't underestimate streaming. In other words, what we're talking about.
Yes.
And don't underestimate gaming. Gaming, you know, Lindsay, just on that subject, I watch my grandchildren, and I watch 50 overs. I'm watching the World Cup. And I can understand kids when they've got the option of playing Fortnite or some other game and not watching the cricket. I can understand. When I was growing up, there wasn't that alternative. You know, yeah. We would go to the Wanderers on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon and watch league cricket. That was our entertainment. We had no alternative.
Mm.
But today, they're turning to other means. And I think gaming is not going to, as computerization becomes sophisticated and technology that increases, I think you're going to find more and more people going to gaming as a form of entertainment. And probably that's Netflix's biggest worry, is just the sheer popularity of gaming.
I played Candy Crush once. I used to play Candy Crush, and I got addicted to it, so I had to stop. But apart from that, I haven't really been a gamer.
No, me neither. I haven't got the patience, and I really don't try and, you know, hitting buttons to blow people up. I used to do it with Space Wars. What was it? You know, when you used to do like
Space Invaders.
The Space Invaders. Loved that, but that was it. Or Pac-Man.
Pac-Man was good. I have been a gamer.
Yeah. Mentality.
Galaxian was another favourite of mine. Yeah, all those old 19. Anyway, we're showing our age now, David. Let's go to the international markets before I get too depressed. US President Donald Trump has accused Mario Draghi of unfairly manipulating the euro, what a load of rubbish, after dovish comments from the European Central Bank president sent government bond prices sharply higher and yields lower, obviously, and pushed down the single currency. This is extraordinary to me because Mario Draghi's ECB last year was saying, well, we're going to rein in our quantitative easing, we're going to stop the stimulus packages, we're going to stop our bond buying program, just as the US Federal Reserve said it was going to raise rates this year. And of course, they've both done these dovish U-turns, which has completely flummoxed the market, but sent the markets into melt-up mode. And I think we're at record highs now on the S&P, up around about 32 points.
You've just missed one point. At the same time, Trump put out another tweet that he's going to meet Xi Jinping, next week at the G20 meeting. It says he had an extended phone call, and teams will meet ahead of the meeting. So combine the two, that's why the markets, and it's It's on his second tweet that I think we really took off, giving up a little bit of ground now. But I mean, we're very on the S&P. We're within touching distance. You know, only a few points. I think less than a 0.5% away from that all time high. So it's been an absolutely extraordinary day from that point of view, because there was nothing happening until Draghi spoke and until Trump tweeted. But what does Draghi do? You know, he has a man who's been tired by Europe. I'm not going to go into that background, but he's really trying to manage this economy through very, very difficult times. You know, and he's being accused of manipulating the euro and that it's underpriced. There might be a point, but what's he going to do? Keep rates where they are so that the European economy can fall in a heap at the same time that You know, Europe is I always used to call it a historical theme park. It was, but there's some wonderful businesses there. A lot of them are export orientated. There are huge problems with the euro, but I think he's doing as best as he can. So, and it's very easy for Trump to do this from a position of power, you know, with his fingers on various buttons. But what must he do? You know?
Exactly. What's the Fed going to do? They've started their meeting now. They've just started their meeting. They'll conclude that meeting tomorrow, and around about, I think it's 8:15 or 9:15 South African time. Anyway, tomorrow evening we'll get the US monetary policy announcement, and it could easily be that the US Federal Reserve cuts rates as well, and suddenly we're back to where we were a few years ago. Stimulus. Every time there's a hint of recession, they just push the easing button.
That's dead right, because economic data is falling because of Trump for whatever reason. Yes, so they push the easing button. The dollar has come under quite a bit of pressure, and I see the rand's about 14.55 or something. Yeah. I think emerging markets picking up a little bit of steam. They've got the big stimulus. You know, the fact that there might be a deal on trade, I think, has helped emerging markets a lot more than perhaps other currencies, and that's where we're seeing the rush here, which is also sometimes difficult to understand. And just looking here, all our retailers are screaming higher, you know, as a result of that. And I don't know. Look, that sentiment, that's what drives markets. You just take it. I'm happy that there's a lot of green around.
Yeah.
Certainly in overseas markets.
Has it got a sort of melt-up feeling about it, though, a short-covering feeling about it, a slightly false feeling about it?
I think so, Lindsay. You know, I must admit, I wasn't comfortable about the data. I was very uncomfortable. We spoke about it last week and maybe the week before as well. That it just, you know, the fact that the markets were holding, but the fact that they were holding was also a good sign. You know, it was a good sign that nobody wanted to sell out. So it's not unusual that as soon as you get a bit of good news, we get this kind of surge now. I must admit, I feel much more comfortable when economies are growing. You know, when IMF comes out and says, we've upgraded our outlook on the global economy, or the OECD says, you know, we've upgraded it. We expect America to grow or Europe. That, to me, is a far better background or backdrop to the kind of backdrop that we're seeing now. Hopefully, Trump and Chinese Premier, you know, do find some kind of agreement and we put all of this aside. I don't know, you know, that can give us some kind of hope. But I'm only going to commit myself once I really know that the global economy is back on an even track.
Yeah, I suppose the cynics and the pessimists and the perma-bears will say, well, the reason that Draghi's making these comments is because he knows something about the Eurozone economy that hasn't yet manifested itself in hard data. And the same as the Fed when they said at the end of December, well, actually, no, we're going to cut rates rather than raise rates. Not as bluntly as that, but that's what they were implying. So maybe everyone is now so anticipatory when it comes to shifts in economic activity, whether it be up or down, that they immediately, again, push the easing button. It's slightly disturbing, this constant cycle.
Now, it is, and how that's disturbing. And I think what came out, I think, either at the same time that he was speaking or a little bit after, was German confidence is staggeringly low. You know, for June, it's come down dramatically. That might be to do with exports because they are a net exporter. They've got a positive trade balance. And of course, if there are trade wars or worries about trade wars, then it's going to, you know, it's going to hurt them. So, yeah, I'm sure that he has got, you know, he's got access to data that's pointing in the wrong direction. So why wait for it to happen before you respond?
Yes.
But Lindsay, I'm, you know, I'm perma bear. I like to be. I'm not perma bear. Perma bull.
Yes, you are.
But I think that I'm going to wait for the June results and see what happens, see what companies say. You know, there's another story out today which also just swings things around. Facebook coming out now saying they're going to introduce next year a cryptocurrency.
Oh, the cryptocurrency, that was it. Yeah, that's right. No, not a payment system, sorry. Yeah,
So cryptocurrency supported by government bonds and government debt, which will be used, they hope, to combat or the dollar. But you know, they've got how many billion users? You know, they've got a market there. I don't know whether this is a genius or a masterstroke in that, but they've got the kind of population. They've got a country there, bigger country, you know, significantly bigger than any existing country in which they can do these things.
Yes.
So the markets responded. You know, all of a sudden, the antitrust laws or regulators are suddenly being pushed aside, and Facebook is screaming ahead on the back of it. That's what makes markets. How do you anticipate these things or position yourself for it? But I'm old in the sense that I like a traditional foundation for the market, which is an economy that's picking up for the right reasons. Also, interest rates are picking up for the right reasons, and so on. So sometimes markets can be very, very difficult to comprehend and understand.
Given your comments earlier on, David, you probably think that your grandchildren are not watching England versus Afghanistan in the Cricket World Cup. England got 397 for 6, incidentally, and at the moment, Afghanistan, as we pre-record, 51 for 1. The other thing that's on television at the moment is the Women's World Cup. Now, I would caution you to make any sexist comments here, because I've been watching some games. The crowds have been amazing, and the football has been top class.
Some of those headers, look, admittedly, their defense is not as robust as we find in male soccer, you know, another. But I've watched some of the goals. I mean, the talent is amazing.
It really is.
Absolutely amazing. I watch Arsenal. I wish they could center a ball like that, or cross a ball, like that. And they had someone up front there that could actually head it in the right direction and not all over the place. But I think they're very, very talented, and it's quite entertainment.
It's entertaining.
In many cases, it's more entertainment than men's soccer, because it's not as tight. It's much looser.
Mm.
And some very, very talented teams. I don't know who's going to come out on top.
USA, without a doubt.
Were they?
Yeah, the States. I mean, they look so good. But answer me this question as we close this conversation. Do you think there are any women players that could get into a second tier or third tier team in the UK or Spain or Italy, or even maybe even play for a lower ranked Premiership team?
I don't think so. I don't think they've got the physical presence that a lot of male soccer players have got. I think we tend to overlook that. You know, that probably at schoolboy level, you know, when you're 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you can find that happening. But you know, that's one thing. When I look at those center backs, I mean, when you've got a Virgil van Dijk, I mean, he's going to kill any one of those people.
Yeah, you know, that's
he'll
true.
Just he'll take them out. I don't think they've got that kind of body. And I don't want that to be thought of as
it's not at all. No, right. It's just physicality. It's not skill. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. I think it's just the makeup. But I must say that don't dismiss the entertainment value of this World Cup. I think it's been superb.
David, have a safe flight to New York. We're going to speak next week, though, from Manhattan, aren't we?
Yeah, I will, with pleasure. Yeah.
Okay. David,
have lots to tell you. Yeah.
Okay, good. Excellent. Yeah. Soak up the atmosphere there and come back with your report from New York. That's David Shapiro, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za.